Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We are beginning a new hour, obviously. Two new programs, discussions coming up in the 6 o'clock hour. Pardon me, 6 o'clock hour. We are pleased to have Jenks Morton back in the studio. His new film, Hoodwinked, a film, an idea that is standing a lot of other ideas on their head. Also join us in the studio is Dr. Raymond Winbush here from Morgan State University. And then later in the show, we'll be joined by Coley Tangela, another film made by students in Baltimore, and Coley, about bullying in our school system. So all that coming up. First, we turn this over to WEAA Traffic. Check on the roads here in Metro Baltimore. And as I always say, if you don't live in Metro Baltimore, enjoy our traffic. We'll be right back. We are joined here in studio once again. It's been a while. Jenks Morton is back. Good to see you, Jenks.
It has been too long, my friend.
Much too long.
Man, I actually missed you. I really
thank you. Missed you too. It's good to have you.
It's good to be back. Thanks for having me, though.
And he's an international award-winning documentary filmmaker, founder of Iago. Correct pronunciation?
Mm-hmm, that's correct.
Iago Entertainment Group, LLC. His new film is called Hoodwinked. The last one we talked about was What Black Men Think.
Yeah, that. Right. And Men to Boys.
And Men to Boys.
Yeah,
right. Right.
But again, I'm a fan. I love coming in with you because you really, your legacy, your history, and just your grasp of the issues. And I'm not buttering your muffins, you know.
No, I appreciate it.
I really appreciate being in here with you.
I appreciate that. Yeah. And once again, he was here last week. Here again, Dr. Raymond Winbush, Director of the Institute for Urban Research here at Morgan State University. Ray, good to have you in the studio.
Hey, good to see both of you.
So this film, let me start out with a small clip. And this is a small clip of some questions. You asked a series of really fascinating questions. Mm-hmm. Let's hear the small clip and we'll come back and talk about the substance of this film and what it's laying out for us.
One question. Are there more black men in jail or in college? Go back a page, please. What hurts me to my heart is that I'm a one-man operation. I do a lot of media. The Washington Post has reported this. The LA Times has reported. Where did Ebony Magazine go? I was in Ebony Magazine. Black men. That's me right there. I'm serious. Ebony. It's in there. It's more black men in jail. I mean, more black men in college. Ooh, I almost messed up on film. Woo!
Are there more black men in jail or in college?
In jail.
Okay, more black men in jail or in college?
Jail.
I'd say jail.
In jail.
I would have to say probably in jail.
In jail.
In jail.
In jail.
Jail.
In jail.
Are there more black men in jail or in college?
Jail.
Jail.
In jail.
Probably jail.
Why y'all say jail?
I mean, look at the campus.
Right?
Because this is an HBCU, there's like a lot, there's a lot of more girls on this campus. The ratio is like, what is it, 13 to...
So this is a very important question.
Right.
The answers are amazing.
Right. And the answer is there are more in college than there are in jails. And it's so... It shouldn't even be a conversation. Actually, when I took on Hoodwink, this was based on an article that was in Ebony Magazine last year that I did. I'm bored with this subject. I'm tired. And that it's still a conversation in our community at this juncture today. It disturbs me that we still have this kind of perception that denigrates or castigates really black male identity. The numbers of black men in college right now, there's 1,444,979 black men in post-secondary degree-granting institutions, non-duplicated headcount, or college, in jails, prisons, military institutions, institutions for the criminally insane, and home arrests, and a couple other institutions that are 824,340, and it's a duplicated headcount. So if Baltimore City arrests you, and in the same year you get sent to Hagerstown or Jessup, both of those institutions count you as one person.
I think that, Ray, what are your thoughts? I mean, you already knew this, of course, but...
Well, but see, it's so refreshing to hear it being said, you know, by so many people. And I think Jenks's film, I saw it last week, and it's just powerful because I think, as you heard in the recording, people will automatically have a knee-jerk reaction to negative stereotypes about black men. There's more in jail. And if you keep saying it, like you said in your presentation, if you keep saying it over and over, people start saying, yeah, that's correct. If somebody tells you, Mark, you've got a third eye in the middle of your forehead, you say, of course I don't. But if you go to about 100 people saying the exact same thing, eventually you're going to look in the mirror. And I think what Jenks has done is an incredible service to try to dispel some of those stereotypes of brothers.
Thanks, Dr.
410-319-8888. Join in this conversation. Let's pull up the clip, another one real quick. I just want to hit a couple of quickly in a row. This is the question about that you asked, what is a positive stereotype about black men or black folk?
Black people.
The question is what's going to blow your mind. All that time you spend in front of the boob tube and all that other stuff, anybody, name me one positive statistic about black people.
Name a positive stereotype about black people in general.
I don't know any.
A positive stereotype? Wow.
A positive stereotype about black folks? Let me see a positive one.
A positive stereotype? I don't know what I can think of.
A positive stereotype about black people?
Your question to me is, name a positive stereotype about black people, and I have to think about it. And that's pretty sad.
Give me a positive stereotype about black people.
We're good at football and basketball and every sport that we play.
One of the hardest segments I've ever had to film and edit, and why I say it pulls on your heartstrings is because this is the culmination, and these are young people. These are college age,
They're all on campuses, Bowie State, other university.
Yeah, Bowie State, Howard University, right. Prince George's Community College.
Right.
And just to ask, it's really, it's called the looking glass self. What do you think about your culture? What do you think about your race, if you want to use that construct? What do you think about your own identity? And the hesitation, the conflicted looks, and it's hard to play over radio, but it's just a troubling segment.
Because the people in the film, the young people in the film were... faces were contorted, trying to find
struggling
an answer.
But remember, and I know in the same film you asked, give me a positive stereotype about Asians and the people. People, they're smart.
We have that clip too.
Okay.
No. let's pull that clip up real quick.
Right.
So we can stay in the conversation. I'm going to stay in the conversation. This is, you can go see the movie or check it out. You need to see this film, but let's play that clip real fast and then just for a minute.
A positive stereotype about Asians.
We seem to think that they're skilled at math.
It's a positive stereotype about Asian.
They're usually smart people.
Positive
really
stereotype about Hispanic people.
You could say they're hard workers.
So name a positive stereotype about Asian people.
Oh, they're smart.
Give me a positive stereotype about Asian.
Quick responses. And I wrote this again. It was in the Ebony piece. I wrote it as a postulate, and then I actually had to go out and film it. And to see so many young people just conflicted and contorted and struggling around what is valuable about blacks' identity right now. It's a painful part. And I kind of let it run long in the film by design because I want people to understand how this negative messaging, how negative information, how negative imagery has impacted kind of the psyche of our young black people today. And it hurts. I mean, it's a painful, painful thing to see a young person, especially these people are in college, too.
I remember, it made me think of a couple of things.
Mm-hmm.
I remember as a kid, there was a book that I got at the library. This is in the 50s, late 50s. I'm older. That
we won't tell.
It's called Every Tenth Man. And it was about all the accomplishments of African American people back in those days, Negro people,
right,
who were 10% of the population.
Right.
And so it was like this positive. It was a book to say not just to black folks, but to all folks, there's an identity here.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then when you go into other worlds, worlds whose kind of worlds were not taken away from them,
right.
You know, whether it's Jewish or Mexican or Vietnamese or whatever that culture
that's
is.
That's exactly right.
There's a root that says, mm-hmm. I am this.
Right. That's so important. And I'm a descendant not only of African, but also of Native American. And I'm not a separatist and not a segregationist. However, those two groups of people, by whatever design, sinister, with malice or without, were stripped of their cultural identity and told to integrate and to assimilate. And if you look at it, how it played out today, the two worst groups, when you talk about impoverishment, wedlock, just a lot of the social challenges, those are the two groups.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at the Asians, as we make reference to, the Hispanics, the Middle Easterners, any other group that comes in here and holds on to their cultural identity, it's not to say that they're separatists. They will build into the collective based upon the skills of their culture that they bring to the table.
They keep who they are, even through intermarriage, keep
right.
who they are.
That's exactly right, yeah. The funny, like in New York, you know, like you have Germans marrying Italians, and they watch them at Thanksgiving. It's a funny, funny kind of dynamic. But again, if you know the root, then you have something to latch on to. And we were told that your root was less than, not equal to, inadequate, subservient, and you have nothing to bound yourself. And now you've got a group of people that are young people that are doing phenomenal things education-wise. I mean, it's staggering when you really take a look at this data, but they still have no sense of individual or group worth. That's what that question is asking.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note that this is not something that started 10 or 15 years ago.
Right.
Tom Burrell, in his book, Brainwashed, uses the phrase that this has been a 500-year advertising campaign about the inferiority of African people in general and black men specifically. And so if you go back into the literature and the images of black, little black Sambo, you know, the Gollywog, which
Aunt Jemima.
Aunt Jemima.
Step you can and go, fetch it, Rochester. You can keep it going.
Right. And you can go back to the minstrel. I mean, it goes way back 500 years. Mm-hmm. And this stuff has been built up. And we've been hearing, as Tom says, this advertising campaign on the inferiority of African people for half a millennium.
Right. And my pastor actually takes it back even far. He goes back to Nimrod.
Oh,
he goes all the way back to that this castigation of black male identity is inculcated into other cultures and for whatever. You know, there's postulates on what I don't even want to get into that. What I will say is that there's a consequence to us as people today by internalizing that message of inferiority, to buying into the ad campaign. And these things, these negative information, negative imagery, and all this stuff that the average, you know, 20 to 25-year-old kid has taken in and internalized is doing very, very damaging to psychologically to their relationships, to their self-worth, to their even their ability to find out their goal and purpose in life.
That's right.
They become drones in a system that have been subjugated to a stereotype.
That's right.
And if we don't do something, it's just a critical juncture. And I don't want to sound like the, you know, inflamist or the Gideon call, but right now at this juncture, this film, what I feel is that 100 years from now, there's going to be two trajectories, and I hate to put dichotomies, but it is what it is. The black community is going to become this thing, this jewel, a part of the American experience, or they're going to wither away about 100 years from now. Those are the trajectories. And I want people to say, this was the movie that said, here was what was going on with black people right now. Either way, whatever happens, where were we at, and then what did we choose to do?
Yeah.
So let me ask this question, and then I'm going to come back to we have callers calling. I want to get them on the phone here with us. We'll be on the air here together for at least another half an hour. I want to get you all joining us at 410-319-8888. But I just take a minute, if you would, Jenks, and just kind of lay out your thesis in the film about the story that America doesn't get. And I mean all of America, black folks, but all of America does not get that you're trying to say there's another side to this because of the way stats are done that we don't get.
And that's what I'm doing in the film, and I'm using case studies. I think in the soul of a people, and not just black people, I'm talking the soul of people, we kind of know something's wrong with what's going on and how black people are represented. But you really can't put your finger on what it is. So what I do in the film is take a couple of myths that have been validated through bad or flawed data and show you where the flaws are in the data, how they did it. So like the jail versus college, that myth has kind of been around maybe 20, 30 years. However, there was an organization that put out a study in 2000 that said, here it is, there's more black men in jail than it is in college.
Right.
And it was wrong. That study was just dead wrong. What they did, they took an entire year's worth of black men incarcerated and put them next to only the fall enrollment of college, mm-hmm. negating an entire three quarters of a year. And but they put it out there. The media did not care. Special interests needed it because they get paid. And government was the backbone to the data. The government doesn't check special interests. They have no mechanism in place to say, here's the data. I don't care how you report it. They're basically hands off. I've never seen a prosecution or for slander or libel. Right. Put them together.
Good word.
But I've never seen the government go after a special interest organization for fragmenting, augmenting, or taking out pockets of data to service their own interests. What we have to do, and this is what Hoodwink is doing for people, is to show you this is how the game is played. You know, I'm hard on special interests, but I understand that's what they do. Mm-hmm. They have to tell you that a fan works better than air conditioning, so you will buy the fan. That's what they do. What I'm teaching people, though, is we have to be more discerning, more critical, especially anytime you hear any information, which is mostly negative about black people. I would not internalize almost any statistic that I hear on the 6 o'clock news about black people.
Let me ask you, I'm a psychologist, so I'm always asking why. Mm-hmm. Why do you think there's, one author calls it cultural disinformation about black people? What's the purpose and the function of, you know, putting out their negative stereotypes
right.
over and over, month after month, year after year, century after century? What mm-hmm. do you think the purpose of that is?
I mean, there's this, you know, the old fear of the black planet theory, but
public enemy.
Yeah, I've never been able to lock down through data or research mm-hmm. some sinister plot to subjugate a people. I just see the consequences.
Yeah.
You understand? Like, I can't say, here's what the plan was from the Illuminati to put black people. I don't know that. What I do know is that at this juncture, my work and my focus is, I think that because of the structure of the black family up until about 45 years ago, I think we did a very good job of buffering and protecting ourselves from the kind of denigration that happened mm-hmm. from the large. So, yes, you get your step and fetches. You do get your Rochester, but you got mom and daddy at home and say, you know what, that's us.
Right.
We don't do that. But we've lost that, and we've got more media influx now over the mm-hmm. past 40 years. So what I'm concerned most about is how people have internalized a message devoid of any kind of critical thinking or discernment about what is the agenda behind that message. So yeah. I want to work on the soul of a people right now, and mm-hmm. we can shoot down a system later on.
Yeah. Let me let some of our listeners in on this conversation. 410-319-8888. And we're here with Jenks Morton. Jenks' latest film that we're talking about is a very powerful movie. Makes us really think about how we think and how we discern, called Hoodwinked. And in studio with us also Dr. Raymond Winbush, of course, Director of Institute for Urban Research here at Morgan State University. 410-319-8888. And Chris in Woodlawn, you're on the air. Hi, Chris, you're on the air. Welcome. Chris, you there?
There.
Well, just don't hang up on him. And we'll go back. Maybe he's off the phone for a minute.
Hello?
Chris, you there?
Oh, wow. I thought I hung up. I'm glad I didn't.
You didn't. Turn down your radio. You're on the air.
I tell you what, man, I'm glad you gave me. Thank you, Mark. First, hello to your guests, both of them. And I actually listened, I guess it was last week or maybe 2 weeks ago when you had Dr. Winbush.
Right.
And I wrote his information down because I really want to – this subject is a – let me get right to it. I've been – for a long time, I've always said the same things you're saying now. And even when you look at some black publications as far as where are all the good black men, and I hear females repeat that. And I'll ask them, I said, well, you don't even know most black men in your city or town, much less in the entire country. So how do you get to make that statement and say it as if it's true? And they always want to repeat these same statistics you put out. So I always ask people to question the whole, even the term media, Spanish for middle, and we always forget that. So someone in the middle is saying what's happening on the left, and they tell it to the right. in the whole deciphering of these messages, we don't question enough. Yeah. I think I really wish I've asked in other forums and stuff. I hate to do this on your show, Mark, but I have a problem with Morgan, WEAA in particular. I don't understand in this time, in day and time, when there's so much turmoil in our community, in the African-American community, an HBCU that has a radio station, that there's music most of the day, there's so much of a need for information locally, nationally, and internationally, the things we need to refute, the things we need to, the misinformation going on in other areas. This is something that needs to be attacked because it is stifling us as a people. There's one area, there's so much I want to talk about, so I'm probably sound like I'm babbling.
Well, see, but there are a lot of callers, so you have to.
Can I just this one last thing?
Please do.
There is a civil right that's being totally ignored. We never discuss it, and this is one of the things that, as people, the country was founded on. And I'm not a gun nut. I want to put that out. The right to bear arms is never discussed in the African-American community. We discussed, we saw that taking away the right to vote was actually non-constitutional. And so when the parties who felt they most could use our votes fought for it, they got that back. But we never, this is the only right. This is perpetual punishment. And yet it's going on in our communities. These are one of the, that sound, they being able to protect your home and your family is part of what is part of manhood. So as you strip down the community to its basic level.
Right, Chris, let me let them respond. You really almost have to take a break, and I wanted to have a chance for our.
Yeah, it was big. That was a lot. Wow, he hits on so many points. But I think the critical takeaway is what we said earlier. I think people feel that there's something going on, and they can't put their finger on it. And I think what Hoodwink is allowing us to do, and it's not the end-all, be-all for this whole thing, but I think it's a great first step to show people how to look at things, how to discern, and what is some of the agenda behind why we get so much negative about us.
So, we're going to say something?
No. I was going to suggest to the caller very quickly, read the book, Negroes with Guns.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew you were going to say that.
By Robert Williams. I think it's always been a discussion of the Second Amendment with black community, but that's not right. Going.
I knew you were going to say that. I have that book on my shelf, and
that's right.
I've had it since that time. Excellent book,
yeah.
Right. You're talking about Robert Williams, who was president of the NAACP and a part of North Carolina. During the civil rights movement, organized a movement to defend themselves.
Right.
Ended up having to flee the country and live in Cuba
for his
safety and freedom.
Deacons of Defense.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, yes. I'm not alone over here because as he was talking, I was thinking about my grandfather. And I had this conversation with a friend of mine. My grandfather carried a .38.
Well, listen.
And my father carried a .38. And my brother still carries a .38. I used to until, you know.
I was going
to
ask you what you carry.
I used to, but then, you know, of course, with family and all that other. Right. But we come from protect your family.
Right, right.
Yeah, my great-grandfather was killed by another black man. Hmm. So, I mean, that it's just, you know, I'm not a gun-toting carrying member of the NRA,
In Cambridge, in the Civil Rights Movement, it was a nonviolent movement,
right?
But almost every man that I knew in that movement
had
a gun in the car to protect themselves in case they were attacked by racist
mobs. That's right.
So that's just reality.
Yeah.
Get to the phones. We come back from this break. The question I want to throw out, and we're going to go to Clarence and Fred, who are calling in to get to their calls.
Okay.
But very quick, we have to. What do I do for a living? I can't even speak. Too many things going on at once. But one of the things I want to address is something you said earlier about being tired of hearing about the numbers of people in prison.
Right.
But there's a dichotomy, isn't there? I mean, between the statistic of 1 out of 3 African-American men who are involved at some level in the criminal justice system, and also the stats that say how many African-American men are in college and the mistake about how many people are really dropping out, though there is still a serious dropout rate, that you have to kind of open the doors to think – to open the reality without losing the battle for the rest.
We'll come back to break.
Come back to that.
We'll see you after this mess.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and I am here with Chris Jenks. Chris Jenks.
I like being Chris Jenks.
That's a caller here, Chris.
Hey, Chris.
I'm sorry. Jenks Morton. We'll get you in a minute, Chris. Yeah. The other Chris. international award-winning documentary filmmaker, founder of Iago Entertainment, talking about his latest film, Hoodwinked, that played in Baltimore last week, Thursday?
Was it last Wednesday?
Do not ask me.
It was
we were at BCCC.
And it was Wednesday.
And it'll be at the Charles Theater sometime the end of October.
It's in October. It's going to be, I think, the last Thursday in October. I got the call. We just got to get it confirmed with the theater. But, yeah, you know, all my movies.
And we're going to get it over here, too. We need to talk about
that. Hey, did y'all record that? Because I'm going to use that. I'm going to put it on my website. I want to come to Morgan.
In other words, of course, we're just tuning in. It's Dr. Raymond Winbush, Director of the Institute for Urban Research here at Morgan State University.
God, I love coming on the show.
So
I really do.
So we've talked about this during the break. And,
right.
And I really, as I told you, you've got me. I hear what you're saying. I hear what Michelle Alexander and the folks are saying.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got me now into this research mode where I'm just going to go tearing into the facts over the next few weeks because
I
got to see them. You
know? Go
one
for
of those
it.
Guys, I have to read it,
go for it
and see it. But give us your analysis.
Well, and I was explaining to you, and that's why I love coming on the show, that like, we can think and we can reason together. And it's not strife between us. That every piece of work that Michelle is kind of doing through that the new Jim Crow era of mass incarceration, I'm kind of on board with almost all of their things, except when they want to juxtapose the incarcerates versus the college. Here, let me wrap your noodle around this. Let me put it like this.
Bad.
Most black men do not go to jail. Does that
Correct.
Sound reasonable?
That sounds reasonable to me.
Now, here's the thing. Most black men do not go to college.
That's true, too.
So, but these two phrases are always positioned against each other as the only trajectory for black identity.
Go ahead, Ray.
I'm sorry.
Real quick.
I'm sorry. I think I stepped on his foot.
No, not at all. I think this idea that one in three black men are going to jail, it comes from, as you know, the Bureau of Justice Statistics. I always think they should take the J out of that acronym. And
just call it the BS.
You're right. Now, I'm going to read according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics, mm-hmm. one in three black men can expect to go to prison.
Right.
So they're predicting they can. It's almost like saying, we expect you to
go to prison. They have a crystal ball.
Right. But see, with people here, when they hear one in three can expect to go to prison,
right.
they say, oh, that means one in three are in prison.
Is that the same one from 2000 or is that new?
I don't know where this is.
I got the one from 2000. It's actually cited in the film.
It might be.
That was coming off. And this is where I wanted to be real clear. Okay, it doesn't matter. Like the jail versus college.
It is the one in 2000.
Yeah, see, and I know that one. Cold is 32.3%.
Right.
At that juncture, and I want to say it was between the ages of 20 and 29. I think it was 20 between 20 and 29, but they took that and then did a future for which, you know, if we really look at the it's a clause inside of the government that talks about you're not able to judge based upon race, creed,
right.
color, all of that. They have taken this and they're forecasting based on race.
Yes. Yes.
Which is way outside of the bounds of what the BJS should be doing.
Right, right.
But what you understand is that, you know, with the privatization of the criminal justice system, that they have to draw attention to them, that they are a needy organization. That's where Michelle loves this stuff, because that's what they do. So.
I mean, here are the stats we're talking about. Then we'll go into something else.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm rambling.
No, you're not rambling. No. The 30% of the that even though white people, I mean, people of color make up 30% of the population of America. They might be larger than that at this point. But 60% of those imprisoned are people of color in America. Latino and African American for the most part.
That's true.
But the other part is that this is also, again, that doesn't get out there, one in every 15 African American men and one in every 36 Latino men and one in every 106 white men end up in prison.
Right.
So, but the other stats about how many people who are black and get in confrontations with police are suspended, expelled.
You will never hear an argument from me that about the arm and weight of government against my people. It's just not going to happen. It's true.
Right.
It really, really is true. But my work and my advocacy is around how we take these phrases and then we blanket it upon the group. And then I get pulled over by the cops. And you know, I'll give you a real good story. I got pulled over by the cops. My license had gotten suspended. Lord knows why, because I travel so much. You know what the question the officer asked me? He said, your license is suspended. Did you know? I said, no. And he said, are you past due on your child support?
Mm-hmm. He did not.
I can't make this stuff up, Mark. Well, I can't.
I've been asked, is this your car? Because it's a late model kind of luxury
right.
thing.
And I'm driving around in a 2004 Impala with black tinted windows. And it's got What Black Men Think on the back.
That's right. There you go.
And this was a brother who asked me this.
Well, he's susceptible to.
Yeah,
he's
so what I'm saying is that you will never get an argument from me about the unbiased and the egregious violation of civil rights by the criminal justice system. What I'm saying through this film, there is a normative perception and actualization of black identity that is just being completely missed.
And I think that is some of the critical things to talk about, because there is a – we need to talk about it. Maybe we'll do this in the next program. We can do it soon, I hope, is to talk about the whole idea of about what's missing when you can't answer the question of what is a positive, quote-unquote, black stereotype about black
folks. Right.
That has to be addressed, and what's missing in here, and that's what you're wrestling with that in this film. You're saying this, we have to start thinking in a different way.
Yeah, because then from the film, the average 13 to 19 year old child has received 29,731 hours of media programming. So it's not just the television. It's not just the Mark Steiner show. It's not just the billboards. It's the smartphone now. It's the
everywhere.
Xbox.
It's everywhere.
It's the billboard ads. It's the magazines. And through all of this. When I'm doing the lecture, I go, just tell me the last time you saw a positive statistic about blacks. That translates over into the stereotype question. Tell me one good thing.
Well, then let's go back to the phone show. Let's have one quick thing we argue about all the time here, which is about media.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have a media conversation that's about race.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
In America.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's the only time you see black folks on media.
Yeah.
And they're talking about race. I'm serious.
That's right. It's the only time I get the call from that daggone Fox News.
Where are the astrophysicists?
Right.
You know, where are the nuclear scientists?
That's
where are the medical doctors on all these shows in the media?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That drives me crazy.
And where's the guy who cuts my grass? Or where's the guy who, when my car breaks down,
who
nails me for like $400 an hour? So that's what I'm saying. These are normative social behaviors, but we've gone into this kind of paradigm that
right.
the only, and I challenge people, especially academics on this, like the pathway out is education. And I will say it's one of the pathways, but there's just
there's so many.
Yeah.
We had these young brothers on the show recently who are these motorcycle riders to the city.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One of the guys who leads the group, who's on the show, these two men, they're older than in their 30s. They've been riding since they were kids. The guy, tattooed, big muscle cat, tattoos in his body.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I have never been to jail. I have never been arrested. My life are these motorcycles. Mm-hmm. You want to make me a criminal.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He said, and what he does, he drives one of those big gigantic cranes on the wharf.
Wow.
He makes a decent living, takes care of his family.
Right.
But,
right.
But we look at him and go,
stereotype.
Right.
Stereotype.
You're a thug.
Right. Stereotype. Yeah, right. Right.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Let's get another call in here before we have to go to the next segment, because we have some wonderful Baltimore City school kids who want to get in.
That's good.
Clarence in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hey, Mr. Steiner. Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Dr. Winbush. Mr. Steiner, my favorite three words, social segregation by economic and educational deprivation. Once you do that, you can do anything to a group of people. You can make them the beast of the country. My question to Mr. Dr. Winbush is, for our folks who have jumped on the bandwagon in entertainment, you can probably guess the ones that I'm talking. How much of the responsibility for that negative stereotype are they responsible for the love of money, if you will? Because if you had asked me that question, I would have said, well, I don't know about the stereotypes, but the positive attributes of black people is we're hardworking, struggling people just like any other race of people on this planet. So how much of that do you think is because of, our people who have exploited us with negative stereotypes in Hollywood and in music just to make money? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Clarence.
Well, you know, very quickly, you know, I think there's three words I would give you: puppets and puppet masters. I think that I look at who's behind the industry that creates these images. And I see MGM, I see Fox, you know. I just read, I think it was yesterday, that Oprah and Perry are going to be teaming up together and stuff like that. But that's the exception rather than the rule. So we can critique people like Nicki Minaj, or we can say things about Lil Wayne and all, like, you know, the thing that went viral with Lil Wayne the other day about his deposition, you know, against Quincy Jones III. But I think that we've got to still look at the puppet masters, and oftentimes we look at the puppets. So if you've been to a puppet show, you know that somebody's pulling the strings back there. And if you don't, you're probably hallucinating and schizophrenic.
So we have about a minute, and Jenks, I want you to close out because we're talking about your film here, Hoodwinked. And in terms of what Clarence said, there's a quote in your movie that I pulled out that just in the beginning of it. I have many quotes here, but is it Howard Thurman, one of the great theologians that ever lived on the planet Earth, and if he was anything but a black man, the world would know who he was, besides black folks only who he is.
Right. It's true, though. You're right.
Am I right?
You're right.
They scaled down their dreams to the level of their immediate experience.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, if we, I can do the stereotype. I can give you the story that I'm the last one, the sole survivor, that, you know, three of my best friends are dead. It's just, you know, one of them, the one that is alive has been to jail. It is what it is. But I come from a, you know, kind of a tougher area down in PG County. But I will not take that lens and denigrate an entire group based upon my own experience. Right. So the brother who referenced earlier about women putting black men down, you understand that person is hurt. So they have they have to displace out and try to justify their, you know, their own pain.
So thanks. We're going to have you back soon.
Anytime, really, Mark. I say this to you and your audience. You know I love you, and I love your work. And I'm not, again, I don't butter your muffins. You know, there's not too many people that I tell that in the media. You are a gem to this city. I appreciate the chance anytime you want me to come on. I'm here.
I appreciate that. Do you have a website people can go to for Hoodwink?
Yeah, Hoodwink is at whatblackmenthink.com. It'll take you right out to Amazon. It is the number one selling black documentary right now.
All right.
All right now.
Thanks, Morgan. Yeah. Okay. Dr. Raymond Bush, thank you both so much.
Thanks, Mark.
Don't go away, folks. We're going to come back to talk about another film about bullying made in Baltimore City by students with their incredible teacher, Kola Tingela, who was also one of my students about 30-odd years ago.